we find that 10 generations between Adam and Noah, we're taught the patience of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even though all these generations angered him. In the end, he brought the flood, but it took 10 generations. And Noach, to a certain degree, is blamed for all of that, and the flood is called Mei Noach. No great COVID to have a flood named after you. And Noach obviously wasn't able to influence his generation and change their fate. Whereas the 10 generations between Noach and Avram ended with Avram Avinu, who got the reward for all those generations, since, as many say, he was able to influence them and save them, so he got rewarded for all of them because he was the cause why they continued to exist. So Avram was successful in saving his generation, and Noach was unsuccessful. Why? So the Sfarno, in the end of Parshas Bereishis, the Sfarno says the following. The Pasuk says, V'noach motza chein be'enei Hashem. Chein always connotes something for free. Matnas chinam. Noach got a freebie. He got something for free that he didn't deserve. What was that? That his family was saved in his merit. They really weren't great tzaddikim, and they would have perished together with the rest of the generation, but they were saved in Noach's merit. But Noach didn't deserve that. Noach was given that for free. So the Sfarno explains, why didn't Noach deserve that his family should be saved in his merit? He says, because people who perfect other people deserve that other people be saved in their merit. But people who only perfect themselves don't deserve that other people should be saved in their merit. Simple logic to that is that if somebody doesn't deserve to be saved in their own merit, okay, and there's nobody who will perhaps have a good influence on them, then there's no purpose to save them. But if they have a connection to someone who in the future may have a good influence on them, then God will save them credit, hoping that even though they don't deserve to be saved now, they will deserve it because in the future that person will have a good influence on them. So somebody who perfects other people deserves to have other people saved in his merit in the hope that he'll influence them. Somebody who doesn't influence other people doesn't have the merit of saving other people in his merit. Now, if the Sfarno just would have said that, we would have said that what the Sfarno means is that Noach didn't bother to try and influence his generation. But that's not true. The Gemara says that the 120 years that he built the Teva, he constantly gave Musar and rebuke to his generation. So it wasn't a matter that Noach wasn't interested in trying to influence and rebuke his generation. It's just that he wasn't successful. And now the Sfarno says, why wasn't he successful? Because even though he rebuked them and he told them of the terrible things they were doing and how they were destroying society, he didn't teach them to know Hashem and walk in his ways. Had he taught them to know Hashem and walk in his ways, they would have been on the level of Talmidei Chachamim, who it says that if you see a Talmid Chacham do a sin at night, don't have any qualms about him in the day, for sure did tshuva. They surely would have repented. But since Noach only told them about the terrible things they were doing and rebuked them of how they were destroying society, but he didn't teach them to know Hashem and walk in his ways, that's why he wasn't successful. You have to understand what he's talking about. And if he would have taught them to know Hashem and walk in his ways, they would have done tshuva, they would have been Talmidei Chacham. What does it mean? This concept of knowing Hashem and walking in his ways is very much defined by the Rambam in Hilchis Deos. The Rambam says that knowing Hashem and walking in his ways means acquiring midos tovos, good character traits. How to get good character traits? By knowing Hashem, recognizing his character traits, and working on your character traits to acquire those character traits within yourself. That's called ladas es Hashem and v'loleches bidrachav, and to walk in his ways. There's a mitzvah in the Torah, v'holachta bidrachav, walk in his ways. And that is something that is of supreme importance. Derech Eretz Kodma LaTorah. Before you can have Torah, you have to have Derech Eretz, you have to have good midos. In fact, it says in Pirkei Avos, Im Ein Derech Eretz, Ein Torah. If there's no Derech Eretz, there can't be Torah. And the Rabbeinu Yonah says categorically, Lo Yishkon HaTorah LaOlam, B'nisha Ein Bo Midos Tovos. The way we'll translate it now is the way that most people translate it. The Torah can never exist by someone who doesn't have Midos Tovos. Therefore, he says, don't think that you'll first learn Torah and then work on your Midos. Because the Torah can never exist by someone who doesn't have Midos Tovos. Now, on the surface, that seems very categorical and not real to fact, because there are people who don't have Midos Tovos and learn Torah. And the pat answer to that is, imagine what they'd be like without Torah. It's not a good answer. The Rabbeinu Yonah says that without Midos Tovos, the Torah can't reside ever. So how could it reside? How could we see differently? In order to understand that, what does that mean? Lo yishkon haTorah laOlam, the Misha ein bo Midos Tovos. I want to tell you a story that's said about three Gedolim, and therefore it leads me to believe that it never happened to anybody. It's just a nice story. It said the same exact story about the Maharal, Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz, and the Rambam. I saw it written about the Rambam, so we'll say it about the Rambam, but again, it's a nice story. Story goes like this. The Rambam had an argument with a philosopher. The philosopher contended that you could train animals totally to go against their instincts. And the Rambam said it's impossible. An animal is programmed to go after its instincts. You can't train an animal to go against its instincts. So the philosopher said, I'll prove you wrong. Give me 10 cats, I will train them to go against their instincts. So, give him the 10 cats. Months later, the philosopher calls the Rambam and says, I'm inviting you to a banquet where I will prove to you that I've been successful. The Rambam comes to the banquet with a little box, and the philosopher comes with a little box. At the beginning of the meal, the philosopher opens his little box, takes out a bell, rings the bell, and 10 cats come out of the kitchen, dressed like waiters and waitresses, balancing the tray with the entree on the tray, each one in their hand, standing on their hind legs, perfectly erect like human beings, and have a towel draped over their arm. They come and serve the entree and curtsy and go back to the kitchen. The philosopher turns around and he says, you see, I've trained these cats to go against their instincts. Instinctively, they walk on all four. They're walking on two legs, balancing trays, acting like waiters and waitresses. The Rambam says, nice, but it's a long meal, let's see what happens. This philosopher rings his bell again, they come, take away the dirty dishes, serve the main course, finally comes time for dessert. Right before dessert, the Rambam takes out his little box and puts it on the floor, opens it up, and the philosopher takes out his little box, takes out his bell again, rings it, and the cats come out of the kitchen to serve the dessert. Within moments, there is pandemonium in the hall. The trays are being thrown all over, the dishes broken, and the cats are on all four chasing the mice that the Rambam let loose. The Rambam turns to the philosopher, he says, you can train a cat to think he's a waiter up until the first mouse goes by. When the first mouse goes by, the cat remembers he's a cat. You can't change the instincts of an animal. That's an animal. An animal is what you see is what you get. The Maharal says that's why an animal is called a behema. Bo-ma. Whatever is in it is in it. It doesn't change. And ashor ben yomo is called ashor. It's born ashor, it dies ashor, it never changes. It's programmed to function. Angels are like that too. They are programmed to function a certain way. They never change. But Adam, and that's why angels are called omdim, they stand on one level their entire existence. But Adam in gematria is ma, what? Because you always have to ask, says the Maharal, where he's holding and what he is, because he's always changing. Human beings can change. Human beings can control themselves and go against their instincts. We also are born with instincts, but we can control them and change them. That makes us different than the animal. In fact, some say homiletically that the pasuk in Koheles that says, "Umosar ha'adam min ha'behema ayin," which really means there is no difference between human beings and animals physically. No difference, physically. The difference is only spiritually. But some say you have to put a comma before the word ayin, and it means the following. Umosha ha'adam in a behema. You know what the benefit of man over the animal is? Ayin. People can say no. Animals can't say no. If their instinct says, eat that thing, they don't think about getting a stomach ache, they don't think that maybe they'll get something better if they leave room, you know, for dessert or whatever. They just eat what's in front of them. They do what comes naturally. That's an animal. A human being can say no. He has free choice. He can overpower and go against his instincts. And one of the problems in the world today is that people don't understand that. And that the whole philosophy of existence is that man is merely a dignified, glorified animal, and whatever applies to animals applies to us, which we'll get to in a second. Okay. However, it doesn't come easily, even to human beings. Human beings, in order to go against their instincts, have to work on midos. You just can't be about midos because you trained yourself a little bit to act respectively, because then you're like an animal. An animal can also be trained temporarily until the first mouse goes by and his instincts are aroused. A human being can have the instincts aroused and still be in control, but you have to work on that. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz said, we normally think that a ganav is somebody who's stolen, and somebody who hasn't stolen isn't a ganav. It's not really true. He said, imagine if you would be in the following situation. You'd be in a room alone with a multi-millionaire, okay? And he's absent-minded. And he brought along $10,000 small change that really he'd never miss, right? It makes no difference to him. It's like his small change for the day. And he leaves it on the table, and he never remembered that he left it there. He is totally absent-minded. And you need that money. Your children are starving. You need that money. If you could take that money in that situation, then you're potentially a goner. The only thing that separates you between the person who's stolen is that the circumstances that made it conducive for the other person to steal came about, and the circumstances that would make it conducive for you to steal didn't come about. So it's just a matter of circumstance. But potentially, you're a ganav. When do you deserve to be called not a ganav? When you've worked on yourself to the point where there's no situation in the world that could ever bring you to steal. Then you're not a ganav. Otherwise, you're just a potential ganav. Depends on circumstance, and circumstances haven't presented themselves that makes it conducive for you to steal. So a person has to work on his midos. But otherwise, you basically end up being a trained animal. You can be like a cat. A cat can be look very respected, look like a waiter, up until the time the first mouse goes by. Reb Naiman in Darchei Musar says that that's what happened to Ephron Achiti. Ephron was very magnanimous. And he wanted to give Avraham Avinu Ma'aras HaMachpelah for free. And he really meant it, says Rav Naiman. It wasn't that he was lying. But in the end, he ended up cheating him and overcharging him. What happened? He said Ephron had a desire for money, right? And he couldn't control it. He never worked on himself. So instinctively, he ran after money. Up until the time the mouse went by, he was a very refined, dignified person and wanted to give Avraham Avinu Ma'aras HaMachpelah to bury his wife for free. But Avraham Avinu made the mistake of mentioning a shekel, money. And the shekel was the mouse that brought Ephron down. Mice come in all sizes and shapes. And this mouse brought Ephron down on his all fours, chasing after the money. If you don't work on your midos, you basically end to be a refined animal. That's what the Rabbeinu Yonah meant when he said, "Lo yishkom haTorah laolam b'misha ein bo midos tovos." Not the way we translated before. The Torah can never exist by somebody who doesn't. The Torah can exist, but not forever. The Torah will not exist forever by somebody who doesn't have midos tovos, meaning who hasn't worked on his midos. And midos means measures, and he's in complete control of when yes and when not, and he can say no if necessary. It can exist temporarily. Up until when? Up until the first mouse goes by. Whenever that mouse for that person goes by, if he hasn't worked on his midos, that's the end of the Torah. Then he's down on all fours. He can be a very well-trained cat up until the time the mice go by. And therefore, we can understand what Reb Simcha Zissel from Kelim, the Alter from Kelim, said, which on the surface needs explanation. He said in a very cute manner, that Charles Darwin promulgated the theory of evolution because he never saw a real human being. And because of that, he assumed that the subhumans that he saw came from apes. Had he ever seen a real human being like my Rebbe, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, he never would have created that theory. It's impossible to believe that a real human being like Rabbi Yisrael Salanter came from an ape. Now, it's cute on the surface, but it seems to imply that Darwin was a guy who swung from the trees wearing a loincloth, munching on a turkey leg on one end and a beer bottle on the other end. Darwin was a very respectable person. He had respectable friends, very refined, intellectual people. How could Reb Simcha Zissel say he never saw a real human being? But does he think that Darwin just saw a bunch of bums and he thought that those bums came from apes? What did he mean? Basically, what he meant is the following. A person can be extremely respectable, but if he's never worked on his midos, and therefore he is prone to follow his instincts when the mouse goes by, then he's basically just a glorified animal. And he's not really different in kind than the animal, just in degree. So it's possible to believe that this degree of animal could come from a different degree of animal. But had he ever seen a human being that worked on his midos, that was in total control, which is impossible by an animal, he would have realized that it's a different in kind, it's not just degree, and therefore it's impossible. This kind came from this kind. Animals don't have that ability to be in total control, whether as human beings do. Human beings have the ability to say no, but they have to work on themselves to do it. If he ever saw anybody who reached that level, he would have realized that this is not just an animal. And the philosophy that human beings are basically glorified animals, just different in degree, is what brings this world to a lot of tzaras. I remember years ago, I heard a radio program that reported about a study they made. This was maybe about 35 years ago. They made a study on horses, and they found that a certain percentage of horses are homosexual. So therefore, it stands to reason that in nature, certain percentage of animals are homosexual, that by human beings the same thing, certain percentage are homosexual, and therefore it's just an alternative lifestyle, it's a natural thing, and that people can, you know, follow whatever their natural tendencies are. I had to stop my car. It was such an absurd thing. Because I could have saved a lot of money. They probably spent a lot of money on this study. Right? I could have saved a lot of money. Do you know there are certain animals that eat other animals, right, of the same kind? So I could have told them that cannibalism is just an alternative lifestyle, right? Some people eat meat, some people eat animals, right? It depends on your tendencies. Just like animals, some of them are cannibalistic, so human beings, some of them are cannibalistic. Or some animals steal from other animals, so human beings could be an alternative lifestyle. Some people are robbers, some people are not. Right? It's just an alternative lifestyle if you're a thief or not. Of course there are animals that have tendencies towards a million things. So do we. I could save them a lot of money also. There are human beings who have heterosexual tendencies and that they're also to put into practice except in marriage. And if they go after their tendencies, they can do terrible things in this world, but they have to control it. Animals don't have to control anything. Animals follow their instincts. They do what comes naturally. That's not a human being. The fact is that people have tendencies to a lot of things, right? Sometimes people upset you, you have a tendency to murder them, but you're supposed to hold yourself back, okay? Animals, if they have a tendency, if somebody they feel is threatening them, they kill them. They don't say no. But that doesn't mean it's okay for a human being to do that. We human beings are not animals. If you think that human beings are animals, whatever applies to an animal applies to a human being, you can take it to the absurd. So yes, we do have tendencies. And with those tendencies, we can do things that are immoral, abnormal, or downright criminal. We're supposed to control it. But an animal doesn't have to control it, does not supposed to control it, and can't control it. So that is what Reb Simcha Zissel said. Darwin never saw a real human being who was in total control of himself, because if he was, he could never imagine that this kind of being could come from this kind of being when they're completely different kinds. All he saw were people who basically were like refined animals, trained animals. So why can't this trained animal come from a less refined animal? It's only a matter of degree. Okay. And in fact, that's why Avraham Avinu was chosen to be the receiver of the Torah, his children. Not because he was the greatest tzaddik or the greatest intellectual. The Torah tells us why he was chosen. Ki yedati, because I know him intimately. Leman asher yitzave esbono v'yesbeso achrov lishmor derech Hashem. He will see to it that his children observe derech Hashem, the way of God, which is midos tovos. He'll teach his children how to control their character traits. He'll teach them midos tovos. Because if you don't have midos tovos, you can't have the Torah. So it's necessary to have that derech eretz kodma la Torah. So therefore, his children can get the Torah. The rest of the world, I don't put stock into that they're going to be able to learn and control their midos. Therefore, they're not the ones who can get the Torah. In fact, I'll always like to say, that's what happened to the non-Jewish world, that why they didn't get the Torah. God offered the Torah to Esav, the children of Esav. They said, what's in it? God says, he's not allowed to murder. They said, we have a problem with that. We have a bracha that we live by the sword. How can we have a Torah that says you can't murder? God left them, went to Ishmael. And they asked also, what's in it? And God says you can't steal. So they said, well, how can we accept the Torah that says you can't steal, right, when we have a bracha, yado bakol v'yad kol bo. Our hand is in everybody's pocket and their hand's in our pocket. So how can we have a Torah that says you can't steal? Left them, came to the Jewish people. We said, nasa v'nishma. It always bothered me. They didn't say no. They said they had a problem. God should have explained to them there's no problem. When it says that you live by the sword, it doesn't mean murder. It means you're going to be mercenaries, soldiers of fortune. You will fight other people's battles. You'll be expert warriors, soldiers. So in a time of war, you're allowed to kill people. So it's not murder. It's okay. You could live by the sword, and it's not murder. Same thing with Yishmael. It's not that your hand is in everybody's pocket and their hand is in your pocket. It means you could be a pickpocket. That's not what it means. It means, the Targum says, that you will be dependent on the world for most of your basic needs, because you're nomads, but the whole world will need you too. Up until recently, that wasn't understood. Now we understand. The world needs the Arabs for oil, and the Arabs need the world for everything else. So, no license to be a thief. Why didn't God explain to them why there's no problem? Why did he just leave them abruptly? I think the answer is that a nation that thinks they have a license to murder or a license to steal have no mitos tovos. And if you don't have mitos tovos, you can't get the Torah. So there's nothing to talk about. If this is what your character is like, then there's no way for you to get the Torah. So that's why he left them abruptly. That's why Avraham Avinu was going to be a goy gadol. Gadol means chesed. The godless of HaKadosh Baruch, when it says HaKel, HaGadol, HaGibor, Vanora, Gadlo is a midas tuvo. The foundation of all midos tovos is being about chesed. Not worrying about yourself only. Being able to worry about others. And then you can control yourself. If you're only worried about yourself, right, then what's it called? Then, and you follow your baser desires, what's good for you, you'll never have midos tovos. Midos tovos is being able to be more objective than subjective. The Bali Musar say, what's the difference between a window and a mirror? A mirror, all you see is yourself. And a window, you see the whole world. What's the difference? A little silver, right? A little kesef. Put a little kesef on the window, it becomes a mirror. All you see is yourself. If you can't free yourself of your instinctive subjectivity, then you're only going to see yourself, you're never going to see anybody else. If you can be a bal chesed, then you can have midos tovos too. Lev tov, a good heart, is the foundation of all good character traits. And that's why it says, Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. The Gemara says, Ve'eschol legoy gadol, that's what we say, Elokei Avraham. Ve'avorechecha, that's what we say, Elokei Yitzchak. Ve'agad lo shemecha, that's what we say, Elokei Yaakov. Hold the question until the end and I'll finish, okay? Unless you didn't understand something I said, and I'll explain it. But if it's a question, then hold it to the end. I'll give you time to answer the question. So, the Gemara says, Yochel b'kulam chosmin. You have Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov. I might think that you end the bracha with all of them. Baruch atah Hashem, Magin Avraham, Yitzchak, v'Yaakov. B'cha chosmin, v'heye bracha, you'll be the bracha. B'cha chosmin, the sealing, the finish of the bracha is Avraham. Why? Because everything depends on what Avraham brought chesed. He was able to teach midos tovos because of that. That's the foundation. You can't have avoda, you can't have Torah, unless you have midos tovos. Derech eretz kodma la Torah. There's one path that leads to the Torah. It's Derech Eretz. There's no other roads. If you don't go on that road, you're not going to get to the Torah. You're not going to get to Avoda. So in the end, it's what Avram Avinu set as the foundation of the Jewish people, good midos, that's what led to Torah and Avoda. That's why Avram Avinu was both the pillar of Chesed and the pillar of Emunah. Because for Emunah to really take hold, you have to have midos tovos. Otherwise, you're just a glorified animal who can be trained to act behavior-wise good, but not intrinsically be a person in control. That's why it says by Avram Avinu, very interestingly, Avram Avinu at 3 years old knew God. He knew there was a God. But it says, he kires Bora, the Rambam says, when he was 40. 37 years it took for him to know there's a God and to recognize God. And only after he was 40 and he recognized God did he go out and try to break the idols and was successful in influencing his generation. But the idea, I think, is the following. Knowing God means I believe in a God. But recognizing him means I know his midos, I know his character traits, and I'm able to emulate them. Avraham Avinu took 37 years for him to work on his character until he was in total control. And then, you can go and influence other people. We'll see in 1 second why. That's when it says, Vayikra b'shem Hashem. Then he went out and he called in the name of God. The names of God are God's attributes. And he taught people how to work on their midos, and then he was able to bring them to Emunah and to Torah. They go together. Okay? On the other hand, the other tzaddikim of the generation, Shem, Aver, Noach, they weren't able to teach them to work on their midos. And even though they rebuked them or whatever, they weren't successful, which we'll discuss in a second why. And that's why it says, Tamim Haya Bedorosav, Noach was perfect in his generation. Had he been in the generation of Avram, he would have been considered nothing. Now, not nothing. If you go from perfect to nothing, he would have been not as great. And also, perfect is an absolute term. You can't be relatively perfect. Either you're perfect, you're not perfect. It's not a relative term. So how could Noach be perfect in one generation when compared to another one, not perfect either? Now, there's a difference between the perfection of Noach and the perfection of Avram Avinu. Noach was perfect as a trained animal. Esu Elohim Isalech Noach. Noach was able to control himself. But he wasn't able to be in total control of his midos. So he was like a well-trained animal. He walked within nature with God. He was very much trained himself to behave properly. His behavior was good, but he wasn't in total control. He never worked on his midos completely. And therefore, by Avram it says, just the opposite. His salech lefonai v'heyei tamim. Walk before me, and the Svarno says, walk before me, look back, observe my character traits, emulate them, and then you'll be perfect. The perfection of Avram Avinu was one notch above the perfection of Noach. Noach was perfect in behavior. Avram was perfect in self-control, in midos tovos. And therefore, once you reach that level of self-control, you're a different person than the person who's just like the animal, just behaves properly. And therefore, Avram raised the bar on perfection, and Noach wasn't perfect anymore, at all. Nothing. Because either you're perfect or you're not perfect. Avram made a different level of perfection of working on his midos. And that's why the Noach, it says, needed constant support from God. He walked with God. He needed constant support. Because when you haven't worked on your midos, you're not in total control, you need that support that the mice don't go by. But when you're walking in front of God, and you've learned from God how to be in total control, you don't need that constant support. Then you can control yourself even if the mice go by. And that's why it says that Yitzchak Avinu didn't go out to influence others till he was 60. If it took Avram Avinu 37 years, it could take Yitzchak longer to get in total control. We'll see in 1 second why being in total control depends on how you can influence other people. Hold on 1 second, though. Yaakov Avinu, on the other hand, constantly was in the Beis Medrash learning Torah. If he had Torah, he must have worked on his midos. So he always had that possibility of being Korei B'Shem Hashem, influencing other people. Now we'll get back to the original Svarno. Noach was not successful in influencing others because he rebuked them about what they were doing wrong, and he told them they were destroying society, but he didn't teach them to know Hashem and walk in his ways. Meaning, he didn't teach them midos tovos. So what? But Avraham Avinu did do that, therefore he was successful. Meaning the following. If you go to the doctor and you have an infection, and the infection, manifests itself that you're sneezing, coughing, and you have a high fever. So the doctor examines you. He says, what do we have over here? High fever? Here's Acamol. Take it. Take your fever down. You're sneezing? Here's an antihistamine. Take away your sneezing. Coughing? Here's a cough depressant. And you take all the medicines, and you feel fine. Are you cured? Mm-hmm. No. What has he done? Taken away the symptoms. But the infection's still there. What's going to happen in a few hours? You're going to get back to the sneezing, coughing, and the fever. Because the disease wasn't cured. Just the symptoms are taken care of. Go to another doctor. He says, there's coughing, sneezing, and high fever is a symptom of an infection. Here's an antibiotic. Take it for 10 days, and you'll be free of the infection. It takes a little bit longer. It's a little bit more involved. But after 10 days, you're not going to start sneezing, coughing, and have the fever again. You're cured. Noach cured the symptoms. Stealing, immorality, they're only symptoms of bad character. But he didn't know how to cure their characters. So he was successful temporarily. They stopped stealing for a while, and they stopped being immoral for a while because he gave it to them, and he rebuked them, and he inspired them. But he didn't change their midos, and therefore, eventually, the mice went by again, and they started stealing again and started being immoral. He cured them up until the time that the mice went by. And therefore, he wasn't successful in influencing his generation. Avraham Avinu got to the core of the disease, the bad midos, and he taught them to know Hashem and walk in his ways, and therefore the symptoms disappeared too. Therefore, Avraham Avinu was able to destroy the idols, and they weren't. Destroying an idol doesn't mean breaking it, because they can easily make another one. It means breaking it and convincing the person not to go back to it. If you've changed his midos, you've given him control, then he'll never go back to the idol because no mouse can get him back on his four legs. But if you haven't put him in good midos, you may stop him by breaking the idol now, but as soon as the mouse goes by, he'll build another idol. So Avraham Avinu was successful in influencing his generation because he started by teaching them to be in control of their characters, and therefore he could then be mashpi on them to change their lifestyle. But if you don't, you can't teach somebody to control their midos, then you're not going to be able to change their lifestyle only temporarily till the mouse goes by. So that was the difference between Noach and Avraham. I saw in the Yateid that the Gedolim of both Eretz Yisrael and in Chutz Laaretz have made a call for all schools and all people to learn Musar and Midos Tovos, in wake of all the terrible tzaras that are happening, especially where Jews, supposedly religious Jews, did the most horrific things in the summer, right? That little boy that was butchered by supposedly a frumpers. So where does all this come from? Because people don't learn midos tovos. We're learning a lot of Torah, but we're like well-trained animals. We don't change our behavior to be real human beings. And they call on every school to spend time every day working on Musar and Midos Tovos, on character building, and people learning Torah, should devote time. The people in yeshivas, in kolalim, or whatever, in seminary, should devote time every day to work on Midos also, because without that, the Torah is not going to be, like we said, permanent. It's going to be temporary, until the mouse goes by. So that is the call of Gedolei Yisrael, and from what we've spoken about, you can understand a little bit, that's what's really special about the Jewish people. Why we got the Torah is because Avraham Avinu ingrained in us this ability to perfect our midos. So if we don't work on it, it's not going to happen. So that is something in light of the way the world is and the way it always was. It is kedai to heed their call, and to spend some time, each one personally and in institutionalized, working on not only becoming more frum, but becoming more human beings also by working on our midos. Yes?
You think about Yishmael, the people that didn't want the Torah, but Yishmael was the son of Abraham. So why would he not?
Avraham Avinu was successful with everybody except his own family. Lot, he wasn't able to influence, nor Yishmael. And even though it says in the end Yishmael did tshuva, but they also never really became the epitome of what Avraham Avinu was. Yishmael was not considered the offspring of Avraham completely. He more went after his mother Hagar. And he behaved well. He did tshuva. But he never really got the character traits that Avraham Avinu instilled in the children of Yitzchak, who were really his own.
What does that mean for Avraham?
What?
What does that mean for Avraham?
It means two things. First of all, in the world, it's like that. Many people can influence many people, but when it comes to their own family, it's very difficult. Because there's a cloud, a Navi Be'iro. A Navi can't affect his own city. They know him too well, and they're not impressed by him. They take him for granted. And that's one reason. The second reason is, Avraham Avinu brought the world to the level of Torah. The first 2,000 years of Torah started with Avraham Avinu. Before that, it was called Tohu Vavohu. Tohu Vavohu means a mixture of light and darkness together. Until Avraham Avinu, it was hard to distinguish what was right and what was wrong. Everything looked like a mishmash. Even when they served idolatry, they said, we're doing it to honor God, because God gave such powers to these things. We want to honor them. So they clothed their idolatry in what appeared to be righteousness, piety. It was all a mishmash. Avraham Avinu came, and he started the 2,000 years of Torah. What does Torah do? Delineate. Look, I give you bracha and klala, chayim and mavis, tov and ra. You want to choose the bad, but no, it's bad. Don't mix it up, the light and the darkness together. No, this is darkness, this is light. That was Avraham Avinu's power, to be able to delineate darkness from light and give people the choice. Until then, everything was mixed up. Avraham Avinu, therefore, could deal with the worst idol worshippers, who were darkness, and he could deal with great tzaddikim. You know, he couldn't deal with people who were still in mishmash. Lot looked like Avraham. His behavior looked like Avraham, but on the other hand, deep down, he was rotten. So he was a mixture of light and darkness. Yishmael is the same thing. Up until the time he did tshuva, he was a mixture of light and darkness. That Avraham couldn't deal with. He could deal with the absolutes of darkness and light and convince people to choose one over the other. But he couldn't deal with people who were a mishmash of darkness and light, like Lot and like Yishmael. Okay. Yeah.
Two questions. The first one is, did Noah know the difference between he and Avraham and just couldn't get there? I mean, did he fundamentally understand?
I'm not sure.
Once someone is in a position where they're able to control themselves, it doesn't mean they can't go back to being just behaving in a good way, right?
Right, no, they can be trained very nicely. Just they have lapses sometimes, or they can keep themselves away from the mice. But they're still not in perfect control. It's not the same level. There's a different level of working on your midos and being in control and just being able to behave properly.
And sometimes you don't really know the difference unless Hashem shows to put you in that.
True, yeah. But again, if you haven't worked on your midos, you know that it's not going to work. It doesn't happen automatically.
How do we know that we are completely in control of our instincts?
When you're in a situation when the mice go by and you can control yourself despite the tremendous temptation.
But it might be today I can and tomorrow I can't.
Yeah, okay. So that's why it's not a one-time thing. It's a life's vocation of working on yourself. You never reach perfection. But at least you work on yourself. That's the idea. Even Avraham Avinu wasn't perfect. There are no perfect human beings. Only God is perfect. But he worked on himself to a point where it was obvious. And everybody has the to work yourself for today. I'm trying at least for today to do that. And tomorrow's the next day, whatever. Because a person can't be perfect, shouldn't give up hope. But he should realize that he has to work as much as he can. And put in as much effort as he can, and then the Rebbe Shlomo helps out too. Yeah.
And then I wanted to ask, you said that for Avraham Avinu, it was problematic to change Lot and Yishmael because there were light and darkness in them.
Right.
But doesn't everyone have light and darkness within them because we have a yet?
Yeah, but they were, yes, but they were to the extreme. Where on the one hand they looked, Avram said that we have to separate because we look like brothers. On the outside, you look like me. On the inside, you're completely different. Where it's so intense that it's very difficult to deal with. Most of us are not so intensely one way or the other. But they were intensely a mishmash. It's hard to separate those things. Okay.